Lebowski, Sam Nation on Talk Radio 790 KABC. Skill and daring, barely overcoming fear and anxiety, reporting for duty at 7 p.m. And you know what time that is. Let's get started. 1-800-222-5222. Sam@samnation.com is the email. And as always, we are live from the Sweet James Studios here in an undisclosed location on the right side of the orange curtain, Canada. Well, there's other stuff going on too, but I with all the crazy mooch stuff yesterday, I needed to talk about this because this is what keeps me up at night. This issue is actually more important to me than healthcare. It's more important to me than even taxes. It's free speech. And Canada, boy, are they ever the cautionary tale of what not to do. Their parliament last week has introduced a bill that wants to fight Islamophobia by effectively killing free speech. Canadian lawmakers are debating this motion that was forwarded by a Liberal member of parliament. Now, that's part of their governing party, you know, Prime Minister Trudeau. He is a member of the Liberal Party, and so this is his party. And they have forwarded this motion on the floor to condemn Islamophobia, to study its effect on society. The sponsor of this bill, a man named Iqra Khalid, and he's a member of parliament, said, "We need to quell the increasing public climate of hate and fear. I need the whole government approach to analyzing data surrounding hate crimes, singling out those against Muslims." Now, why is this important? I mean, why the hell do we care about what's going on up north? Most of the time, things that happen in Canada really just kind of fall off of our, roll off our backs, you know, like it ain't no thing. But I bring this up because the left in America looks at this kind of stuff and gets excited about it. If the left had its way in our great country, the First Amendment would get neutered. It would get rewritten. It would get modified to the point, it would get watered down to the point where it no longer carried the same weight that our founders intended it. Now, to give you an example of this, there was a professor who wrote an op-ed piece in the New York Times. The liberal, our liberal parties, right? The Democrats' paper of record. And this gal's name is Lisa Feldman Barrett, a Northeastern University professor, I believe, of psychology. And the title of the piece is "When is Speech Violent?" Now, this came out on the 14th of July. So it's been a couple of weeks. And again, with everything going on, I haven't had time to really roll up my sleeves and tackle this. But the very posit of her piece, the thesis of her piece is, yeah, sticks and stones, you know, they can break your bones. So actual violence, that's violence. But speech can be violence too, because if speech is aggressive enough, it can cause reasonable people enough trepidation, enough anxiety, enough hurt that it physically affects them. See, for the longest time, we've always wondered, you know, where is this whole hate speech thing headed? I mean, yeah, it's always my theory. It's the sticks in school. We were always told sticks and stones can break your bones, but words can never hurt me. That's what mom told us to do. Remember? Oh, little Johnny, he's saying terrible things. Well, you know what? How the hell does that matter? Just go tell him that words can't hurt you and move on. Shake it off, we were told. And that's always been my argument when I'm dealing with the left. I've always I've always found it kind of a silly thing to assume or to allow words to hurt people. And of course, I've mocked the left's position in protecting people from hurtful comments. And this has become a big part of our debate as we, as universities across America, have barred speakers from coming to their campuses. We've seen this with Ann Coulter and Milo Yiannopoulos, among others, getting disinvited from speaking at various colleges around the country. And well, I'm going to add, I mean, it's a very important thing to mention here. Colleges ought to be a place where young, impressionable morons, okay, which is what, I'm sorry, I mean, that's what our kids are. I mean, they don't have the life experience that you and I have. They went to college, they went to high school somewhere, maybe in a big city, maybe in a small town. Maybe they had a religious upbringing. Maybe they didn't. Maybe they had conservative parents. Maybe they had liberal parents. I don't care. I mean, to some extent, there is a degree of small town-ness in every person that comes out of high school, because there's a certain amount of comfort zone that they're coming out of by virtue of living at home with their parents, by virtue of living with some of the same people that they've grown up with. And college, in my view, has always been this place where you go to hear, see, and experience some of the things that you didn't when you were growing up with mom and dad. And not everything that you're going to see in college is going to be easy. And when we are rewinding the clock and taking our, I don't know, to getting into the DeLorean and activating the flux capacitor and traveling back in time 40 years, the liberals in this country were telling us conservatives this very thing. That was their argument for why colleges were the way they were. They were telling conservatives, hey, conservatives, open your small minds. Listen up. Your provincial upbringing that your kids have had, the bubble that they are leaving, we're gonna burst it, and we're gonna expose your young, impressionable youths. We're gonna expose them to some crazy stuff, and they can choose what they want and don't want. Now, no, that was the argument. That was 100% the argument in the 1960s and 70s and on college campuses. And that was exactly how radicalism, liberal radicalism, was sold to my parents' generation. Well, my parents are a little bit older, but to baby boomers. And today, liberals have done a complete 180. It is a total farce when you begin to disassemble it, because now the liberal argument is, if you go to this crazy woman, Lisa Feldman Barrett, in her op-ed piece in the New York Times of July the 14th, she says certain types of adversity, even those involving no physical content, can make you sick, can alter your brain, even kill neurons and shorten your life. Goes on to say basically your immune system has little proteins in it, and they are literally thrown out of whack by chronic stress caused by these hate speech speakers. I'm not making this stuff up. This is in the New York Times. Has to be true, right? No fake news there. I guess it's an opinion piece, but it is part of a growing body of thinking of liberal, I would even say orthodoxy now, that wants to protect young people on campuses from being exposed to the type of radical speech. You know, Milo Yiannopoulos, we've played some Milo clips here on the program. It doesn't really matter who it is. A college campus should be a place where, should he resurrect from the dead, Adolf Hitler would come and speak and have obviously students be disgusted and debate him. But it would be a place where even the most repugnant speech is heard, is opposed, is dissected, is debated. And the reason you have to allow that is, who decides what hate speech is? Who is the gatekeeper? And this is really the question that no liberal advocate of this type of policy is willing to get into. This is your takeaway. This is the thing that if you've got a friend that thinks that, yeah, well, we really don't need Ann Coulter on college campuses. Okay. Easy to determine who Ann Coulter is. Hello, is your name Ann Coulter? Are you blonde? Are you a chain smoker? Are you funny as hell? Are you this thin? Yep, that's Ann Coulter right there. Do you hate Delta Airlines? That's her. We know who Ann Coulter is. How do you define someone who isn't Ann Coulter, but is equally reprehensible in the mind or in the eyes or ears of these people? You get into thought policing. You get into moving people from one bucket, we'll call it the acceptable bucket, over into the unacceptable bucket. To me, someone has to do this. I mean, yes, exactly. Who's going to sift acceptables into unacceptables? Who's going to decide who the deplorables are? This is like socialism, right? I mean, it's you've got this grand utopian idea, and it sounds great, right? It sounds thrilling, and then, you know, mere a few years later, you end up with Venezuela. Here, the idea of protecting young people, well, I think it's asinine on its face, but you have young people who need protecting, and their neurons, what does she say here? Their immune system includes little proteins called pro-inflammatory I don't even know what this word is, cytokines? This is insanity. If you're already using and devolving the argument into enzymes and how the speech is affecting your enzymes, this is absurd. Someone has to make the determination, and that's where the world of theory enters and will meet Realville. And in Realville, who's making the determination? I went to UCI once upon a time, briefly, and then I ran out of there. Basically, I was 20. I mean, I could spend shows and shows and shows talking to you about the crazy stuff I experienced at the University of California in Irvine. The idea of having one of my, let's say, social science professors being the gatekeeper of what was acceptable in terms of speech in the social studies department? No way, no how. What you end up with is speech you like versus speech you don't like. All of this is merely a cover for speech you do not like. And my further assertion here is, it's such an important takeaway. You have to understand, what if somewhere somebody someday decides that something that you want to hear is something that is unacceptable? Don't you want to be deciding what you hear? If you're a college student, don't you want to be deciding? And by the way, as a parent, because hell, you know, you and I, we're parents for the most part, right? You've got kids. Who's paying for that college degree? I think we are, right? I think you and I are opening up our checkbooks and we're writing a big fat check to that university. What do you want for that money? I actually totally disagree with conservative orthodoxy of the 1960s. I'll call it neoconservative orthodoxy, and liberal orthodoxy today. I don't want my kid to go to college and strictly be reinforced in one perspective, with one ideology that he already has. I want him to be exposed. And my job as a parent, and I see this, trust me, I'm already exercising it, is to arm my children and prepare them for the crazy world ahead so they can debate and conquer these crazy ideas when they are confronted by them. So hey, I'll play you some clips. You've got to hear this woman. She's nuts. But her level of craziness will affect your kids someday. Trust me. Let's get into this. Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, back after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, rarely wrong, but always right. 800-222-5222 if you want to be on the program. We're talking about this woman, Lisa Feldman Barrett. She was she wrote an op-ed in the New York Times a couple weeks back, but it's particularly relevant. Her op-ed, the positive of her op-ed is, you know, why it should be reasonable to ban certain speakers from college campuses. This comes on the heels of a decision in Canada to put forward a very strict form of hate speech law that protects any kind of criticism of Islam. And it looks like the measure is going to pass. Thankfully, in this country, we have very strict free speech laws. I want to explain one thing that helps kind of separate out these two issues. It's very critical. I don't really hear people getting into it because we alternate very freely between discussing free speech and discussing speech on campuses. Most college campuses are private. Okay? They're private. And private entities, look, I will go to my grave defending the right of any private entity to do as they wish. I noted in the news the other day that Congress was debating free speech on college campuses. That's kind of like Congress debating baseball and, you know, and steroids. I don't freaking care. Let baseball regulate itself. Let colleges, most of them private entities, let them decide how they're going to do things. When I'm talking about, much more alarming to me, of course, is when a state, when a country like Canada, like Germany, like Great Britain passes laws that abridge free speech. College campuses, however, here's where it is. This is not a question of government to fix this problem. It's a question for you and I, as the consumers, and we'll call it we're really consumers by proxy, because we're sending our kids there. Okay, so when we send our little impressionable idiots off, we love our kids, right? But they're, you know, they haven't figured out everything. So we send them off out in the real world, you know, quote unquote, send them off to college, and we pay some ungodly sum of money to send them there. What we expect as customers is what? Well, I'll tell you what to expect. I expect that your kids' brains grow and develop. And they don't grow and develop if all they hear is one opinion, or if they are put in this very carefully, we'll call it curated sandbox of thought. You know, you want to send your kids out into the open ocean. College should prepare them for real life. Sooner or later, they're going to hear somebody that has an extreme opinion. I hate to break it to you, but this is how we are programmed as humans. We have extreme differing opinions. That's the real world. So it's not a question for government to solve, but it's something for us as consumers of this good, as the people paying for our kids' tuition. That's something for us to demand, and we ought to demand it. So here is what this woman this Lisa Feldman Barrett is demanding. She wants to explain why hate speech, why now? I mean, why is this such a big issue now? Why do we need these kind of protections now? And this is her on Fox News with Tucker Carlson. He did a number on her, but here's what she was trying to explain.
This particular moment in time, hateful speech is particularly problematic because we live in a culture that is full of casual brutality, that people say horrible things to each other on social media. Bullying is rampant in schools, and now we even have politicians who just lob the F-bomb at one another. And okay. this kind of verbal aggression, if it goes on for long enough, is harmful to your nervous system.
My dad, I'm so offended by this, by the way. My dad was born in 1941 during the German occupation of Czechoslovakia. Professor Barrett, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You want we live in a culture that is full of casual brutality? People were summarily executed on the street by the Nazis. You want a culture that is... My dad remembers, 4 years old when the war came to an end, random buildings in rubble that were standing the next day. Casual brutality. I need more time to address this woman's stupidity. Don't go anywhere. Now, if you don't want any stupidity and just the straight truth, John Wolfe is up next with the news.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rogowski, Sam Nation, Talk Radio 790 KBC, 1-800-222-5222 is the phone number here on the program. Sam@samnation.com is the email. We are live from the Sweet James Studios, deep behind the orange curtain, providing analysis steps ahead of the mainstream chatter. Yes, this is all interrelated. You have a problem in society. And one of the problems is, and by the way, I'm not just picking on this problem. I'm only using this as an example because of what's going on in Canada. You have a problem. The problem is radical Islam. Now, that's not a conclusion. It's a problem. I'm not getting into any conclusions here. I'm just saying that's a problem that we ought to talk about. What is Canada's solution to that? Let's bar any criticism by law. Let's pass a law that bars any criticism of Muslims because it's hate speech. It's hurtful. It's terrible. Words are hurtful, just as the professor over there at Northeastern University is arguing. We'll get a little more into that op-ed piece here in a minute, but you see what's happening. You have a government shutting down speech about an important topic. I'm not even getting into a conclusion about anything. I'm just saying, how do you solve society's problems? You solve them by talking about them. You solve them by debating them. You reach conclusions, good conclusions, by having an open and honest debate. Our founding fathers were keenly aware of this. Which is why, in the Bill of Rights, what's the First Amendment? Yeah. You think it was pretty important to them? I think so. The First Amendment. Free speech. And we as a country are loath to put any kind of restrictions on free speech, which is why any efforts for this type of hate crime restriction, they invariably fail in the Supreme Court. But the other part of this is, how are we raising our youths? How are we raising our young people? And the most alarming thing I've seen this trend right now where hate speech. So the question gets asked, who determines what's hate speech? And I posited that earlier as well. I mean, this is the challenge you should put to all of your friends who say, hate speech, I think it's bad. You know, we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. You know, why? We don't want to be cruel people, and we don't want to cause untold misery to people that we disagree with or people that we don't like. You know, that's not what you do. And the comeback to that is, this is what you say. You say, well, okay, well, who decides what's offensive? Who's the gatekeeper? And the retort right now, see, the liberals have been evolving. Before, their answer was, I don't know. And now their answer is they've come up with a new one. You ready for this? Their new answer to this is, oh, it's based on the reasonable person standard. And people press, well, what's the reasonable person standard? Oh, it's a legal standard. I saw this the other day somewhere. It was actually this woman. It was this Feldman Barrett woman. She was talking about the reasonable person standard. And the reasonable person standard comes from criminal law. It's enshrined in our legal system. And it's basically, you know, what would a reasonable person do? It's an average person standard. So we the courts over time will look at average care, average skill, average judgment, and kind of put that into determining a standard for legal liability. But my biggest worry is that when we go after our institutions and we try to create in our institutions of higher learning, in our colleges, our universities, this place where you can't offend anybody and you can't say anything that is outside of liberal orthodoxy, because that's what really is. Offense is really code for any conservative thought. You will start over time to shift that reasonable person standard, won't you? You'll end up with a reasonable person standard that tomorrow is not what it is today. Because today, I think a reasonable person listens to what this Barrett woman is saying and laughs. But I don't know if we go through another, 10 years of this type of censorship on our college campuses, that'll continue to be the same. Sam Rzhovsky, I'm going to be back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rzhovsky, Sam Nation, talking about my friend, my attorney, Sweet James Bergner. You know, speaking of free speech and the sticks and stones can't break my bones, you know, words are judged differently than actions in the law. I mean, they are. So there is a legal separation. But you actually can defame somebody under the law, and Sweet James will handle that type of case of all things. I mean, there are cases where people suffer a damage to their reputation because of something that happens online. Somebody will write something particularly nasty. It affects you. Maybe you lose your job. Okay. Maybe your spouse thinks now that you're a creep and a dirty person. I don't know. It can be whatever. A lot of things get put online that shouldn't be there. Not up to the government to regulate it, but we're all responsible adults. And if somebody does something to hurt another person, potentially can be held responsible for it. But you know what? Still, the sticks and stones, somebody throws a stone at you, they're going to be held liable. So I hope they carry stone throwing insurance, because Sweet James is the man for you. His phone number is easy to find, easy to talk to, easy to reach, and you want to get his opinion for help. 1-800-881-2021, 1-800-881-2021, or visit his website, sweetjames.com. All right, back behind the Sam Nation microphone. Here we go. We are talking about Lisa Feldman Barrett, professor at Northeastern University, making a very interesting, albeit totally insane, argument about free speech on college campuses. Not a good idea, she says. We need censorship in the sense that we need to pick and choose what speakers we invite and don't invite to college campuses. It, of course, introduces the whole idea of who decides. Okay, she says we don't. I mean, she specifically cites Milo Yiannopoulos. Can't have that guy on. And school. He's way too out there. So hateful. Somebody's making that decision. And my point in all of this is, you know, it's college campuses. You know, these are young skulls, and we got to fill them with something. And I'd rather expose my children to the most crazy liberal nonsense, as long as I know that they also have the ability to hear the opposite view. I think that in the free exchange of ideas, truth wins. But the liberals, they are terrified of this. Now, before you think that Canada is the only country that bars free speech, and I was discussing the news from the other day that They are busy working on a law where they are they're going to ban basically any kind of hate speech against Muslims because Muslims seem to be apparently targets of hate crimes in Canada. if you think this can't happen here, we do have laws that protect us. We do have the First Amendment. But under Barack Obama, you know, elections have consequences. His attorney general, Loretta Tarmac Lynch, went out to target hate speech days after the San Bernardino shooting. And this is what she said about free speech and its limits.
Now, obviously, this is a country that is based on free speech. But when it edges towards violence, when we see the potential for someone lifting that mantle of anti-Muslim rhetoric, or, as we saw after 9/11, violence directed at individuals who may not even be Muslims but may be perceived to be Muslims, and they will suffer just as well, just as much. When we see that, we will take action. Since 9/11, we've had over 1,000 investigations into acts of anti-Muslim hatred, including rhetoric and bigoted actions, with over 45 prosecutions arising out of that.
Yeah, thank goodness we got Jeff Sessions in there instead of her. You know, this is a little blast from the past. For those of you who maybe are not the biggest fans of Sessions, could be Loretta Lynch. Okay, just a little friendly reminder here from Sam Nation. I want to give my response to this enough time. And in all of what's happening now, I want to circle back to a local story up in Sacramento with an imam, that is a holy religious preacher of the Islamic faith, an imam up there who recently got into some hot water with his own hate speech. But it's this. My take on this is not what you would think, okay? So I'm going to just don't go anywhere. You'll want to hear this. Sam Rojofsky, back right after this.
Talk radio. 790 KABC.
Sam Rojofsky, Sam Nation, Talk Radio, 790 KABC. Talking about hate speech and how it's just a terrible idea. I'm just a free speech advocate, period. No ifs, ands, or buts. I played that clip from Loretta Lynch from December 3rd, 2015, one day after the San Bernardino shootings, where she was less concerned about finding the perpetrators and explaining why many of our fellow Americans were lying dead in a pool of blood and more interested in getting into hate speech against Muslims. So, of course, that clip, I know it's 2 years old. Still very less than 2 years old. That's very relevant because it gets into the mind of a liberal. Now, these liberal minds are walking among us. These empty heads are walking among us. And greatest example of this surfaced just the other day in a piece this was published when? July 28th. Molly Sullivan writing for the Sacramento Bee. Davis imam apologizes for sermon that was condemned as anti-Semitic. Now, this was a Muslim preacher named Amar Shaheen gave a controversial sermon in Davis that, according to Ms. Sullivan, inflamed religious dialogue. She characterizes the sermon as one where the preacher prayed for the annihilation of those responsible for the closing of the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem. And that's as far as she goes in characterizing his sermon. I am going to read to you his actual words. O Allah, count them one by one and destroy them down to the very last one. Do not spare any of them. O Allah, destroy them and do not spare their young or their elderly. O Allah, show us the black day that you inflict upon those who occupy Palestine. O Allah, this just keeps going. Show us the wonders of your ability that you inflict upon us. O Allah, turn Jerusalem and Palestine into a graveyard for the Jews. For the Jews. Turn them into a graveyard. Okay. Seems pretty reasonable, right? Should we debate this? Should we point to that and say that maybe this guy has a problem? The censorship that I am talking about has already begun. Because Miss Molly Sullivan, who is a journalist, quote unquote, writing for a paper, the Sacramento Bee, not a totally insignificant periodical or daily, she's already self-editing what she's writing. You want to know what's important in all of this? We have to fight for the freedom not just to say what we think, but to hear different opinions that will influence us. Maybe there, maybe not everything that we hear will influence us, right? I mean, there's things that we hear and goes one in one ear out the other. But I don't want to live in a world where a newspaper reporter is either afraid or is ideologically driven to gloss over it. Because when you have an Islamic preacher that says, let's turn Palestine into a graveyard for the Jews, I don't want an American free-thinking, liberal, conservative journalist, whatever, to characterize it as a prayer for the annihilation of those responsible for the closing of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. That's a bold-faced lie. But beyond that, it's already a submission to this type of limits on free speech that this Professor Barrett wants. And it's unacceptable. It's not who we are as Americans. I'll be back tomorrow night. Looking forward to it. See you then. People.